Hey guys, it's The Great Debate.
Yes.
Yeah, it is.
Are you ready to start?
Jump.
So ready.
Jump in.
It's movie week.
Great. Yes. It's April. People are going to the movies.
It's April. The Oscars were 6 weeks ago. Of course it's movie week.
You know, opening day.
We thought
of some movies.
A couple of topics that sort of had to do with the movies, and so we're calling it movie week. I've got a micro debate. I'm putting 4 minutes on the clock. Are you sure you want 4 minutes?
Yeah.
We can maybe do it. We'll see. Whatever.
No.
Okay, four.
And the topic up for debate with Steve Healy taking the pro is popcorn tastes good.
I'm Steve Healy. I'm taking the pro. The butter and salt are a great addition, but we're just talking plain popcorn. Pop it in your mouth. It's a good time. I mean, we could get down to like the basics of what is taste. Like, does the texture of the popcorn, like, is that part of the fun? Is the crunchiness included in the taste?
Nope.
I say yes.
Nope.
I'm a taste macroist. But I think that just, you know, corn tastes good. Popped corn also tastes good. It has a little bit of cooked on there.
What?
And also, I think if we're being realistic, like, the butter and salt, that's part of the popcorn experience.
What?
Yes, that is part of the taste.
Oh my.
I know Dave's so horny to just be like a, you know, Jesuit about this, but butter and popcorn are part of popcorn. Butter and salt, that's part of the popcorn taste, and it helps popcorn taste good.
I'm not horny to be a Jesuit about this. I'm horny to be accurate about this. Never has a food had so many other tastes added to it in effort to make it consumable as popcorn. Salt, butter, caramel, cheese, sour cream and onion, cinnamon, you name it, they've tried to throw it on popcorn. And in fact, naked popcorn tastes almost like nothing. I don't think the crunch counts as part of the taste. That's part of the crunch. That's part of the eating experience. It's not part of the taste. Taste is the actual sensation that it creates with our taste buds. And the truth is that popcorn itself doesn't taste as good as regular corn does. And if I ask the listener or Medina to think of the taste of corn in one's mouth, no butter on there or anything, you can feel that taste. What's the taste of popcorn? It's bland. It's nothing. There's a bit of sort of fibrous, I don't even know how you describe the taste, because it stinks.
Certainly not
bad. You gotta add to it.
Stinks? Bad?
No. I don't mean it smells bad. I mean it's just not a good taste. In fact, you know what? You're right. It doesn't taste bad, but it definitely doesn't taste good. It tastes like nothing.
I'm willing to guess that your body is probably 70% corn.
What?
We are made of corn.
Oh.
You drink Coke all day. You eat a lot of corn-based product. Even the beef you eat is basically corn. We are corn.
Corn is different than popcorn.
We can't get enough corn. The next level to corn is popped corn.
Oh, it's such a weak argument.
Which is like the most popular snack. One of the most popular snacks in the country. Maybe potato chips are ahead. But popcorn is in competition as just a great, healthy, simple snack. And part of what makes it appealing to people is that it tastes good.
Well,
people aren't eating it because it tastes like shit. They're eating it because it tastes good.
They're eating it because they add oil, salt, and butter to it.
Yeah, why not plus it? Why not plus the experience?
Salt,
you know? Why not put on music while you're dancing around?
There's a difference between plussing the experience and actually making any kind of taste at all. I mean, it's funny you bring up potato chips, because we could also just as easily be arguing like a cooked potato tastes good. I would argue that it doesn't. It tastes very bland. It kind of has a popcorn-like sort of blandness, and it's almost indescribable. But once you add salt, butter, sour cream, cheese, whatever you like to it, or once you fry it or cook it or however you make potato chips, then yeah, it starts tasting good. But much like popcorn, you need to add something to the experience. Otherwise, it's not good. It doesn't taste good.
Because potato chips or popcorn taste better with salt
lumping
and pepper,
chips in there.
That doesn't mean that they don't taste good without that.
It doesn't just mean that, but the fact is that they don't taste good without it. I mean, you're right that that's not proof, but it's certainly like a point of evidence in favor of them not tasting good. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, I don't know.
Salt doesn't really taste like anything. I mean, people are going to yell at me about that. I get it. It tastes like salt. But the function that it performs when you salt any food, nothing tastes good until you've put salt on it, because like, it cuts open your mouth a little bit and it allows the flavors of the food to come in. So I think you got to take salt out of the equation. Butter, on the other hand, it tastes like something. Doesn't taste like a lot. It tastes like something. And so maybe when you're eating popcorn, it doesn't taste quite as good without the butter. But then there's other shit that you could put on there. I think popcorn with just salt kind of does taste good. I don't think anyone won.
Okay. I could listen to you talk about tastes all day long. What are your favorite tastes? If you could have one taste, what would it be?
Well, like the savory taste of like perfectly cooked beef with the right amount of salt on it is just, I think, a delicious taste.
On the subject of Medina's tastes, I recall we were in a hotel room in Lake Havasu, Arizona. Mm. We were at the Western Pyrotechnic Association, Western Winter Blast, setting off fireworks and making our own fireworks. And it was raining at night, unfortunately. And we're sitting in a Super 8 or whatever, and we ordered a Domino's pizza.
Yeah, delicious.
And the toppings that you wanted were ham, pineapple, and jalapenos. Mm-hmm. Your argument being that was all that was savory, spicy, and sweet, all the flavors.
It's the perfect combination of toppings on a pizza because it hits all the notes.
Hard to argue with, unless you happen to hate those tastes together.
I love...
Well, if you don't like spicy, salty, or sweet, then what else is there? With the sauce.
To me, it really got to the essence of Medina to have like a definitive, strong take on the perfect Domino's pizza that was based on some kind of theory, right? Mm-hmm. That was cool.
You're listening to The Great Debates, by the way, and we are deep into host chat.
Oh, we're in host chat.
I think that it really represents like the sort of, I don't want to say hedonistic attitude of Medina, but the sort of like, why not?
Essentialist, yeah, for sure.
Essentialist, yes. Why not have all the flavors if
also,
you can?
Also, why not? I think that those who are inclined to cook out there and chefs out there and whatnot will agree with me that like the perfect dish hits all of these notes in one way or another. Even if like the spice is maybe, that's going to be on a spectrum, but certainly if you can like make a sandwich, right, that has spicy, sweet, and salty in there, and savory.
That's
then you
a
like
good sandwich.
A BLT, for instance, has the sweetness of the tomato, the salt of the bacon, and the savory there. And then there's a crunch with the lettuce, and then that hits all the notes. Maybe there's a little bit of pepper in there or something in the mayo.
Maybe like a spicy aioli.
One of my favorite BLTs is at the M&O Grocery, the M.O. Market or whatever it's called down in Soho in New York City. And the mayo, the spread that they use is not just mayo. It's like a spread that has a little hint of some kind of spice in there. And it makes the BLT taste better. So anyway.
Now, after taste, unfortunately, comes the time to go to the bathroom.
Okay.
What's going on?
On a recent episode of the podcast, we talked about bathroom day.
Mm.
Oh.
And we put it out to listeners. Right. We were talking about whether it would be a good option to get all your going to the bathroom done for the month,
right,
in one epic day.
Yes.
A bunch of listeners took me up on my challenge to do some math on that. Probably the most thorough job was done by listener Jacob R.
Oh, Jacob R. did a great job.
He sent us a long statistical analysis of going to the bathroom. I just want to lay on some numbers for you.
Lay it on us.
Average person is going to spend about 1 hour, 53 minutes per month going to the bathroom.
What?
Yeah.
Wait. Like actually
that's one, just time of excretion, minutes. Not warm up and clean up. Okay. Right. So you're going to pee, average person is going to pee anywhere between 4 and 10 times a day, usually 6 to 7 times a day. Mm-hmm. Dave is right, it takes 21 seconds to pee about. There's no medically accepted normal for bowel movement frequency. Anywhere from 3 times per week to 1 to 3 times per day could be considered healthy.
Wow.
So Jacob does the math. a person's going to spend about anywhere between 1 hour, 53 minutes per month, to 4 hours per month doing their business. You want to double that to add warm up, etc., washing your hands. We're talking about 2 hours, 4 minutes to 8 hours. Average time is going to be 3 hours, 46 minutes per month of going to the bathroom.
3 hours. So it's a minimum day. It's a short day.
Yeah, 4 hours. That's your bathroom day.
It's a quick day.
Get two movies in.
Yeah, read a book.
And you're out of there.
It's like a flight.
Yeah, it's a flight from Chicago to Miami.
Mm-hmm.
It's a flight from your intestines to the toilet.
Boy, if you booked a flight from Chicago to Miami on your bathroom day.
That would be a popular flight.
You wait
flight.
For that green, the ding, and then you go in there.
You're good.
And you just settle in. Yeah. And when you get to Miami, you're done for the month and the plane is toast. They have to retire it from the fleet. All right, well, should we debate? It's movie week.
It's clearly movie week here in the Great Debate Studios. That's why we're talking about salt and go to the bathroom.
So. I've got a very rich and flavorful movie debate.
Okay.
Oh, baby.
And Steve, you're going to take the pro.
Whatever's more life-affirming.
Are you guys ready to just go into this?
Okay. I think this weirdly is more life-affirming.
I think
for
so
you
too,
to take
yeah,
this.
Definitely. Yeah.
I agree. Here we go. Topic up for debate. Spielberg is better than Scorsese.
Scorsese is a master, a great filmmaker. He made Taxi Driver, Goodfellas, etc., etc. Very good, top shelf filmmaker. Spielberg,
very big of you to admit that.
Spielberg is, my friends, on another level. First of all, he basically reinvented cinema with Jaws, the first ever blockbuster, a movie that's funny, scary, exciting, a movie about friendship as much as it is about killing an enormous shark. Even if he'd done nothing but Jaws, I think Spielberg would be in the conversation of great filmmakers of all time. Then, Indiana Jones, Jurassic Park, what's it called? Schindler's List. He's also...
What's it called? Schindler's List.
He's involved in the Back to the Future films.
Whoa.
Yeah. Are we just talking director or are we talking whatever?
I mean...
I'm just saying that
he's involved.
You'd think he was an EP. I don't think those movies would have happened without him, put it that way. Gremlins, executive producer. Color Purple, not his best. Goonies, okay? Still Spielberg. The Money Pit, whatever, not that huge. Empire of the Sun, Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Arachnophobia. I'm just...
Yeah.
Hook.
Hook, these aren't great movies, though.
Twister. Men in Black. Okay, then he's in on the Band of Brothers series. Like, basically the cinematic celebration of The Greatest Generation. That's like a day in the life of Steven Spielberg along the way to producing a ton of awesome movies, any number of which can go head-to-head with Scorsese's movies. Spielberg is better than Scorsese. He's got a bigger worldwide presence. He's created more definitive characters. There are whole amusement parks centered around rides from movies that Spielberg created. Universal Studios couldn't exist without Spielberg. Spielberg is on a next level of character creation, world creation, invention. He can appeal to kids. Compared to Spielberg, Scorsese is like a miniaturist, a man who makes a very fine cabinet versus a man who makes enormous murals that dominate the room. They're both wonderful, talented artists, but they're simply not on the same level as creators of culture.
And bigger simply isn't better, and that's what it comes down to. A lot of the things that you're giving Spielberg credit for in terms of changing cinema, I would say he also changed cinema for the worse, because Back to the Future also gave us Back to the Future 3. And Indiana Jones also gave us Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull, which is
okay, so we have so the punishment for the amazing movies is one B-minus movie? Fine, I'll take it. Well, I enjoyed Crystal Skull. Underrated film.
That, if you're willing to stand on that, then fine. If part of your argument is that you enjoyed Crystal Skull and that you liked that there were aliens and you liked the crazy performance in it and you liked Indiana Jones doing like splits on some crazy vines, then whatever. I thought it was laughable.
Shia LaBeouf took a lot away from the film for me, but okay. Like if the price of Raiders of the Lost Ark, Temple of Doom, and Last Crusade is that I had to sit through Crystal Skull, fine. It wasn't not unpleasant Saturday.
That's... The price of that, that's not the correct way to look at it, in my opinion. It's not that, hold on, let me try to formulate this argument. Instead, it's an opportunity cost. It's not that you have to have, that because of Indiana Jones, you have to put up with Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. It's Steven Spielberg, for some reason, has to make Kingdom of the Crystal Skull instead of making another original great film. Martin Scorsese does not make Goodfellas 2. He does not make Casino 2. He does not make Gangs of New York 3. He does not make Raging Bull 4. Donut... Can people hear Donut in the background? I apologize. Donut understands the greatness of Scorsese. She is on to my argument. She understands that Scorsese's movies are singular. They are more interesting. They are more thought-provoking than Spielberg's. They are less appealing to the lowest common denominator of moviegoers. They also just simply have a higher hit rate. If you look at, like, I mean, yeah. If
please don't turn this into just we're going to list every movie and then I'll say you, Hugo stinks and you'll say.
You can't talk about Gremlins and Anaconda and not then ask me not to turn this into a list of movies. But we do have to talk a little bit about the movies they
made.
Can
we talk about the whole, like, sort of the ethos gestalt of the filmmaker?
Sure, yeah. We can do that too.
So we don't have to, you know, sit there and be like, well, Silence stunk, but okay. Departed, I thought was overrated.
Well, I mean, can't we do both? Okay. Don't we have to evaluate these guys on their actual movies what we think they put out into the ether as human beings?
I think one guy created worlds, one guy made some very good movies and some mediocre movies.
And you're saying...
Spielberg created worlds. He transported billions of people to entirely new places and realms of the imagination.
Interesting, actually.
He brought to life the most horrific and the most glorious moments of world history. Martin Scorsese made some very cool character studies.
Well, interestingly, Steven Spielberg didn't create a lot of the worlds that you've referred to. Most of his biggest hits were adapted from previously existing material. He didn't create the world of Jaws. He didn't create the world of Jurassic Park. Those were created by Benchley and Crichton, respectively. Whereas
that's
Martin Scorsese...
We could have had garbage versions.
Martin Scorsese
movies.
Actually did create the world of Taxi Driver, which was unlike anything we ever saw. He did help create
off
the world
screenplay
of...
from Paul Schroeder, whatever. Like,
okay, that's fine. But also Scorsese has written more of his own material than Spielberg has.
Okay.
And he also created the sort of like American gangster world in a way that hadn't been done before.
First of all, I think Spielberg, as much as anybody, owns the creation of Indiana Jones, I think. Him and Kasdan and the other guys and Lucas basically came up with this
character.
Yeah, but
is that really a world you haven't seen before? A guy fighting, you know, like a adventurer? I mean, if anything, those movies were throwbacks to like old, to like the Humphrey Bogarts or like, you
know. Yes, they took these things from their childhood, reinvented them in this amazing way for a whole new generation and the entire planet.
Right.
I mean, well, Indiana Jones is now synonymous with adventure.
Okay, so
20 years after the first movie.
Instead of like updating something from their childhood, what Martin Scorsese did was build worlds from scratch, find performers who had no previous experience and breathe life into them. I mean, I can't believe that you would actually argue that the characters in Spielberg's world are more interesting or like more well drawn than the ones in Scorsese's world. And I would certainly like to think that the benchmark for whether someone is better than someone else, to the extent that we can talk about artists being better than each other, isn't whether or not there's a t-shirt for sale with someone's face on it at the Universal Studios theme park, but rather does it make people think? Does it make people enjoy the art that they're experiencing? Does it make people think differently about the world around them? Does it make them feel like they have actual differences of like they see a movie and suddenly either like they actually want to make a movie or actually that they feel differently about the people whose paths they cross every day. I would say that Scorsese does that tenfold more than Spielberg does.
Tenfold?
Because
Dave,
Scorsese's,
come on.
You know what, Scorsese's,
you're being crazy.
Scorsese's aim is to make us think and to make us actually like have some difficulty with these characters, whereas Spielberg's aim is to make us be entertained. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it's a higher degree of difficulty that Scorsese is pulling off. And And he also does it better. His films simply, like, pound for pound, are better than Spielberg's. We have to at least talk about the fact that Spielberg makes straight-up stinkers. War Horse is abominable. It is so slow and boring. I couldn't even tell you what it was about. Shutter Island
stinks. Are we going to go tit-for-tat on movies?
Haven't seen it.
Hugo, boring. Silence. Nobody cares.
I totally disagree about Hugo. I saw Hugo. Did you see Hugo in 3D? By the way,
I didn't
unbelievable.
See it.
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, talk about... You know what actually is interesting about Hugo is that Scorsese is actually beating Spielberg at his own game in Hugo. Here is the story of a boy with a father. It's got all of the Spielberg hallmarks. One of the few times that Scorsese tries to adapt a book, right? He says, okay, I'll do this rather commercial project. And he's able to breathe this incredible life. I mean, it's got all of the Spielberg hallmarks. There's an automaton. There's a boy with a lost relationship with his father. There's incredible, like, tracking shots that, you know, feel like those are actually more Scorsese's than Spielberg's. But the way the story is told, the relationship between this young boy and this girl are absolutely fantastic. I mean, I watched that movie with my niece and nephew, Great Debaters Ben and Kate, who you may remember from Great Debate Juniors, and they were absolutely transfixed by it, as was I. Much more so than, you know, the adventures
of Tintin.
Your niece and
nephew didn't like Jurassic Park?
Jurassic Park.
They didn't like Jaws. Look, they didn't like Goonies. They didn't like Raiders of the Lost Ark.
If you... Healy, when was the last time you watched Goonies? Which is not directed by Steven Spielberg.
It's been a while.
It's bad. It's not good. It doesn't hold up. It seems silly. The acting is way overwrought. There's only a couple of performances in it that have aged well. Everything else feels very cartoony. It feels absolutely silly. The effects look ridiculous. The practical effects look, you can see right through them. The story is fine, but it's like kind of just silly. And by today's standards, it's just not that impressive. It's not even really that fun. Also, like, the Chunk character is embarrassing. It's basically like, or not Chunk, what's the guy? The, like, guy who's mentally handicapped or whatever. None of it is looks good by today's standards. Unlike a movie like Cape Fear or even Age of Innocence.
Steven Spielberg, executive producer, by the way. Age of Innocence, boring, worst Daniel Day-Lewis movie. Just brings to the opposite of life the world of Edith Wharton.
Okay, well, the truth is that I haven't seen The Age of Innocence, but it looks beautiful, and there's no way that it's worse than The BFG or Bridge of Spies.
Dave, this debate is going to get so tedious if you just say
you can't
okay
argue about
Scorsese movie and then a bad Spielberg
movie. What are the worst Scorsese movies? That's part of the argument.
After Hours, Shutter Island, this is off the top of my head. I don't have my phone in my hand.
It's not off the top of your head. There aren't that many bad Scorsese movies. You've looked at
Boxcar
the Scorsese
Bertha,
filmography. That's not a real movie.
Yeah, it is.
The Twilight Zone, Temple of Doom isn't that good, Always, 1941, War Horse. These are all subpar Spielberg movies.
Are you going to knock a filmmaker for experimenting and breaking new ground? Okay, whatever. Like, let's take just 1941. I haven't seen 1941, but here Spielberg is like, let's get John Belushi and make a big epic about the panic that was sweeping the West Coast when World War II started. It's a comedy epic. What an interesting, ambitious, cool idea. How fun and exciting to attempt that. Did it work out? No, but, like, whatever. Like, this is an awesome, interesting artist. I think you don't like it because you're a snob and you perceive Scorsese to be more quote-unquote serious, more New York. His films have an R rating.
Oh, if
not
anything,
for children.
If anything, Scorsese is dirtier, way funnier than Spielberg. And every time Spielberg attempts to do anything remotely funny or inject a little bit of humor into his films, it falls flat, in my opinion. Like, the jokes or the sort of comedy of, let's say, A Catch Me If You Can, which is a movie I actually like a lot, are they, like, compared to the humor or the darkness of, say, A King of Comedy or the other small, even, like, the comedy, so to speak, of, like, Last Temptation of Christ or the great amount of irony or the laughs that he's able to...
Okay, I have seen Last Temptation
of Christ recently. It's unbelievable. It's so good. Yes, it is. It is accomplished. It is accomplished. It is weird. And if you're going to give someone credit for experimenting, I say Last Temptation of Christ is far more successful as an experiment than 1941 is, which neither of us have seen.
Let's have closing statements.
Okay. Who's taking the pro? Me? Mm.
Yeah, so Spielberg.
Spielberg, starting from pretty much out of the gate when he was 26 or something and directed Jaws and saved Hollywood, for one thing, plus reinventing how you make movies. He began a career that has filled theme parks, thrilled entire families, invented wonderful new characters, brought to life incredible properties, built whole skyscrapers of the imagination, plus brought to life the Holocaust, World War II, the Cold War, being in a Japanese prison camp in Empire of the Sun, Minority Report. This is a guy who's inventing across the spectrum versus a guy who's a very talented, very gifted sort of New York filmmaker who appeals to the Daves of the world with his edgy kind of King of Comedy material. He's got one guy, Robert De Niro, who carried him for most of his career, and Scorsese's a great artist, no question, but he's simply not on the level of a Spielberg.
And the idea that Scorsese doesn't bring us to worlds the same way that Spielberg does is, I think, unfair. Yes, Scorsese focuses on the world of New York and the sort of grittiness and the underbelly, but he also brings us the world of Howard Hughes in The Aviator, a wonderful film, an incredible world.
A botched film, a not very interesting film.
I strongly disagree. It's certainly not as botched as any of the 12 bad Spielberg movies that we've talked about. Look, here's what it comes down to. Your argument that Spielberg saved Hollywood, which I find a bit tenuous at best, I'm unconvinced that that's actually the case.
Well,
hold on. These are closing arguments. Spielberg, you're going to say that Spielberg saved Hollywood. I would say that Scorsese saved movies along with the other auteurs of the 70s. And I would rather have movies than have Hollywood. And for that reason, Scorsese is better than Spielberg. His films are better. We didn't even mention the documentaries that he's made, the incredible contribution to the world of music through The Last Waltz and Don't Look Back and other pieces of work that Scorsese has both directed and been a part of, not to mention Scorsese's incredible efforts to preserve old films and the work he's done for medium of film.
And Spielberg preserved the memories.
And I guess
of
we're
Holocaust
throwing all
survivors.
The rules out the window. Look, Schindler's List is a good movie. He wasn't the first guy to make a movie about the Holocaust. Like, yeah, he's... And also, by the way, like, has anyone sat through Shoah or whatever? As a film project, sure, it's important, but I don't think those movies actually, like, had the impact that they should have. I'm talking about the Shoah project. Because he overindulged. Scorsese always hits home runs. Spielberg hits blockbuster doubles that aren't that great. Scorsese is better than Spielberg. Whew. Oh, baby!
Before you speak, Menina, reveal your bias.
I mean, I'm biased towards Scorsese.
The better director, Scorsese.
This is a hard debate. It's very hard to win, I think, the Spielberg side in this room. But maybe out there in the world of our audience, it's not so hard. I don't know. I'm having a hard time deciding who won this debate, in large part because I'm trying to discount my bias. And like with Dave sort of preaching to the choir, Steve, I think you made some compelling arguments, but I don't know. I might have to recuse myself.
Oh, that's interesting.
Interesting. Turn it over to the listeners.
Yeah.
Now, listeners, disregard your bias.
Do the listeners... Here's a question that occurred to me as we were doing the debate. Do the listeners who write in and say, you know what, Dave crushed that one, or you know what, Healy won that one, really, are you guys being convinced of something that you didn't think heretofore? Or is it a situation where you're revealing your bias?
I'd love to see an email that's like, "Hey, I'm a Scorsese guy,
right?
But
Healy won.
I love Spielberg,
and vice versa."
Yeah,
yeah.
For my take, my part, there's something about the memory of all of the Spielberg movies that it's just like, eh.
Yeah.
I mean, they're so important and so good and everything. And then I'm kind of like, ah. But then again, when I watch Jurassic Park, when I watch Jaws, or when I watch Indiana Jones, maybe.
One of them. Two of them, maybe.
I am reminded that they're pretty good.
I think that Spielberg has almost become so big that he's like part of the wallpaper, and it's very difficult to really pull yourself back and assess what the world would be like without him. Whereas Scorsese, like a lot of pretty good artists, you can be like, oh yeah, he made that cool thing, and it's great.
Easier to evaluate.
Yeah,
Scorsese,
I think, is the more charming public personage and ambassador for the movies lately. Mm-hmm. But
I don't know about that.
I think the impact of Spielberg on Hollywood is just, it can't even be reckoned with. It can't be calculated. We're living in a Spielberg world. It's very hard to...
And I think that's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like it has, there's more about the aura of Spielberg that is affecting to us than actually the movies. Because whenever I look back at the list, I'm kind of like, well, maybe this is sort of thin. I don't know. Is that crazy?
No, not at all.
They're... I think the Scorsese canon maybe is a little richer and carries a little more weight for me.
Well, there's a reason that every time we started listing movies, Healy was like, you can't do that. And it's because pound for pound, Scorsese's movies
no, it's because I hate higher debating while looking at my phone. And like, it's very annoying to me if you're going to like say some Scorsese. Then I have to pick up my phone and look. And obviously Scorsese has some duds too.
And you know what? That cost you some points for me because your opening statement involved going through a list of Scorsese.
Yeah, you introduced Spielberg. Hook and Anaconda to the evidence. I mean... You can't do that enough.
I think if you just made a list of Spielberg's like tier three work, you'd be like, wowie. I mean, like,
what?
Yeah, I think you would. I think it'd be like incredibly cool, awesome career. If you were just think about this, if Spielberg, if he'd done nothing but create whatever, what was it, Tiny Toons or Animaniacs? Which one did he do?
Yeah, I think Animaniacs.
That's cool. He created a very popular kids cartoon.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, Scorsese's tier three is like Gangs of New York. I mean, that's crazy.
Scorsese only made movies, right?
No, he's
Spielberg's
made
done a bunch of other stuff.
Made documentaries, and he also
by the way, The Last Waltz is just so good and so really important and valuable to have.
Also, Boardwalk Empire.
I was listening to Robbie Robertson on Mark Maron's podcast, and he was talking about The Last Waltz. We got together, and we didn't miss a single note. It's like, what? No, what are you talking about?
Oh, they're all cooked up out of their minds.
They're
so sloppy.
It's the opening track is an overdub from another.
Oh, that's hysterical. I was just watching them because I'm listening to Testimony, the Robbie Robertson book right now.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And so I've been watching clips from The Last Waltz. If you like the Forever Young they play with Dylan, it's sloppy as hell. They're all over the place.
Neil Young is, I've never seen someone more higher on cocaine.
He's just so out of it. But I'll tell you, man, bring in the Staple Singers for The Weight. Oh baby, nice. Can't beat it. And that The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down in The Last Waltz is about really as good as it gets. It's really fucking top notch. Those guys know what they're doing.
One of the best introductions to it, like first 30 seconds of a movie that I can think of is the first 30 seconds of The Last Waltz.
What you gotta remind me.
Well, it's the they open with Don't Do It. Which is a great kind of like lesser known track of the band. Like it's not the first one we put on. We're doing Cripple Creek or The Weight or whatever, but Don't Do It has this beautiful intro. And like we get to have a second or 3 seconds of each of the band members. It's this feeling of warm up. There's a lot of music and then the vocals kind of come in this beautiful chorus. And it's like, it's very rousing. And
but what about in Jurassic Park when Laura Dern looks through a huge pile of dinosaur shit?
Yeah, that's stupid.
It was
Jurassic
pregnant.
Park stinks.
She's pregnant.
It's stupid. It looks so dumb now. That movie stinks.
I will say one thing issue with you, Davis, is with your arguments, is when you go to like the special effects of a movie 20 years ago don't look that great and don't hold up. I just think that's like, it's anachronistic to impose that on. I mean, when we were watching those movies at the time, it was mind-blowing that these effects were happening, I think.
Yeah. But maybe, I guess I just like, that's a reason I don't know. I just would rather see a movie. Like, I still have to watch that movie in today's day and age. I can't go back in time and watch it. And so, like, hey, we watched Raging Bull. I don't know if you remember at your apartment. Like, this is like 8 years ago or something. Remember this on your big projection screen? I mean, it was the first time I had seen it, and it's staggering.
Yeah.
And if you watch Jurassic Park now, you go, okay, those dinosaurs are fake. Right. And the acting is not, it's very 1993 acting, and you kind of know what I'm talking about by that. And there's some good stuff in there, but it's a little silly.
I think you have to, you can't necessarily look at these things now. You have to remember the banked joy you got when you first saw Jurassic Park, right? It doesn't have to last forever.
Okay, that's fair. I didn't think it was that great when I saw it. I was like, oh, okay.
That said, I watched Jaws like with my whole family at Christmas maybe 2 years ago and thought it was fantastic.
It's interesting. I've never seen Jaws. It sounds good.
You've never seen Jaws?
It's really, it's really, really quite good. Very, very funny and suspenseful. And
yeah, it seems scary.
It is. In a good way. Guys, what an epic episode of The Great Debates. Movie week.
I'm spent.
I hope you guys enjoyed some popcorn while you were listening to this. Anyway, I had a great time. I can't wait to hear from our listeners on the Spielberg versus Scorsese.
Cut loose, guys. Yeah, tell us myself. What you really think.
Warts and all, give it to us.
Well, you can take it.
GreatDebate69@gmail.com or GreatDebate69 at GreatDebate69 on Twitter. We'd love to hear from you. And can't wait until we see you next week. Okay.
I love you.
Great Debates is produced by Mark Carosello. Our audio engineer is Ethan Edinburgh. The theme song was composed by Christopher Knight. The debaters are Steve Healy and Dave King, and the program is moderated by Dan Medina.